Welcome back to the Traffic Jam. I'm Afterburner Al along with Weasel, and we have just a few minutes, but we're going to make it a real special few minutes. We'd like to welcome in Eric Tucker, and if that name sounds familiar, he has a famous family member, Sean D. Tucker. And so you've probably spent as much time at air shows as you have maybe in school.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from when I was 9 to 16, I traveled. My whole summer vacation was on the road.
And you flew Wednesday in the air show, and you're flying tomorrow, right?
Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. Yep, and you have Sunday. You have the J3 Cub Act, a little kind of the... A modification on the flying farmer a little bit, kind of that way?
Yeah, just full rodeo clown. Yeah, so we do that comedy act, then the car top landing on top of an ambulance, actually, and then the dead stick aerobatics.
Okay, yeah. You show me a picture of the dead stick aerobatics. You've got the smoke on the wingtips to kind of show the energy management involved in that. And that's just something, a skill that just about every pilot should have.
Yeah, you know, so my crew guy, Mike, he drives the ambulance for me. He just got his private license. And so I actually took him up and did a dead stick with him. And we climbed up to like 6,000 feet, working on coordination exercises on the way up. And then we turned the prop off and coasted down. And, you know, he had a lot of, like anybody, he has a lot of trepidation the first time you do that. But, you know, really... when you're all the way at idle, it's pretty much like your dead stick anyways. And so it's just, once you get over the psychological hurdle of the prop being stopped, there's kind of no difference at all. You only got one shot of landing, just no go around.
I had a student that was like that he was terrified that if the engine quit, like death was imminent. And we went up over the airport at about 4,000 feet, shut it off, and I just had him put it in a slow flight and the prop stopped. And he was like, after he kind of got over it, he was like, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
It's probably not a thing that most instructors do, but it was like, you know, that was that.
It kind of should be, though. I mean, it's like that barnstormer age of flying, yeah.
Yeah, bring back spin training, too, you know, exactly. That sort of thing. You know?
So on the J3 you're landing on, I got interviewed before this interview, and so now I'm just returning the favor to Eric. But you're telling me about some of the high-performance airplanes you've flown. A lot of them you see out there, the normal air show airplanes, but you decided you wanted to go back down to a smaller airplane and kind of show some of the things that you're doing in the airplane, just moving the stick a lot, dancing on the rudders, and just kind of... managing, as you said, the energy of the airplane.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was 12, I got to spend a week with Jimmy Minning, who flew here a lot. He was the air boss for a long time. And he did, you know, car top landings, comedy acts, and all that for, you know, probably 40 years or something like that. And I've been wanting to do a comedy act ever since. And I was 12 and spent a week with him. And I've been kind of wanting to do a comedy act ever since. And, about 3 years ago, I convinced my wife that it was a good idea. You know, it's all for the kids. That way we'll be able to afford an airplane for the kids and learn how to fly in and all that kind of thing. So we've been having a lot of fun with it.
There was a cub doing a dead stick routine in the background. Right. I can't remember what that noise was.
You said that it was the higher power cub, so I figured. You said it was a C-85 is in that particular cub that you're flying.
It is, yeah, and it has the it's the Dodge Dream Machines STC, the 0200 crank in it, the stroker motor.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So they say it could put that 100 horsepower. It definitely does a little bit better than my buddy C-85.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm having a little trouble seeing you. You're here with Method 7, but you have you can see me just fine through those glasses.
That's right. It's all for the home team. Yeah, no, Method 7, they're a local company where I live, and just the wonderful people. And I started talking to them when they started getting into aviation, having coffee with them a couple times a year, just kind of help them think about their marketing and such. And then a couple years into it, I told him, I'm like, hey, so I got this Cub project. He's like, dude, let's do some promotional stuff. And, you know, a few years later, here we are at EA, and they're actually doing really good. They make phenomenal, phenomenal sunglasses.
Very cool. Now, those are the I just heard that they're doing prescription ones for guys like me that wear, you know, prescription glasses. That
yeah, they have the bifocals and the progressives and all that kind of thing. I just, my last medical, my left eye, I read the bottom line, and she's like, you want to try that one again? It's like, okay, I guess if I guess C, I'm guessing O on this one, so I might have to dive into that next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of that 50-50 going on sometimes. What I was interested, one of the things I was thinking about, because we mentioned at the top of the interview how a lot of us know you because you started participating in your dad's air show acts early on. So how much did you want to how much were you excited to be a part of that? And you know, is this something you wanted to do and just kind of grow on you, or is it just like, I got to be a part of this?
You know, I mean, I think I'm just sort of like a fun junkie, I guess. Like, you know, I mean, I got a list a mile long of the things I want to do, from music to surfing, snowboarding, skateboarding. I mean, like, Alaska, kind of backcountry flying. I mean, there's sail around the world. Yeah, like, the list is a mile long. And all growing up, I just had this incredible opportunity to be raised around, like, all these airshow pilots and, you know, kind of, it's a bit of a traveling circus. So coming to Oshkosh and all the airshow pilots, to me, is almost like a Thanksgiving-type celebration, where it's like going home to, like, my Kearney family. Mm-hmm. And so...
How old were you when you started announcing?
I was, from when I was 9 to 16. So nine okay. years old, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember it when we were still in the old radio station, which was downstairs at the old announcer stand at that point, and you went up there, and I got to, it takes some courage for a 9-year old to get up in front of 100,000 people and start talking. So
I just pantomimed everything that Danny Clisham and Gordon Bowman Jones said about my dad's act. It was like pure plagiarism.
There you go. Yeah. I see you get your shyness from your dad's side of the family, right?
But you also are able to dial it back as you need to, because you fly a King Air 350 and a Falcon 900.
Yeah. So that's my day job. So everything I do in the airshow world, I have to make sure, like, you know, I don't violate any regulations, because, like, you know, my wife, she's just now getting back into the workforce. But, you know, mm-hmm. like, the paycheck comes from my paycheck. So I got to make sure I behave.
Now, are you able to, if you think you're in a 30-degree bank, are you thinking that you're straight and level, or you haven't moved the yoke yet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, funny enough, my first King Air job, I was repositioning a King Air from Santa Rosa to Petaluma, uncontrolled field at Petaluma, and I just came off like flying air shows and formation acts and stuff like that. And it was an uncontrolled field, and, you know, there, like, the weather, basically there's 1,000-foot overcast that came right up to over the field. And so I just, like, flew over, dipped a wing to look at the, you know, it's uncontrolled, so you should look and make sure there's not a tractor stuck on it, right, or anything. And as I dipped my wing, you know, full level flight, maintained 1,000 feet, the airplane trajectory was exactly what I expected, but the freaking thing started screaming at me, bank angle, bank angle, bank angle. I'm like, what is this? I told the guy after I landed, I'm like, did you know this thing will scream bloody murder at you if you get to a certain bank angle? And next time in the sim, I figured out it was like 55 degrees that thing screams at you. But it seemed like a normal trajectory, and so I've toned it down. I've learned to be a gentleman in a corporate airplane.
Well, that's because these airplanes, in the hands of most people, they're like, they're going to screw up soon.
Yeah.
They're just telling you, well, this is your last chance.
Well, and that's where, you know, the... We talked earlier about spin training and doing unusual attitude training and that kind of thing. Is, if you've never done it, I mean, I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely the most healthy thing you can do for the safety of flying. But then also, it's just really, really fun. But, you know, I was talking to one a student pilot out here. She's learning. Her goal is to get her ATP and stuff like that. And we were talking about how important it is. You know, we're talking about spins, we're talking about, you know, pattern work, all this stuff, and it's like, airplanes should really be like flying a bike. Like, you should have a kinesthetic feel for how to fly an airplane, because that allows you to pay attention to all the other things. And I was telling her about stalls. You know, stalls are completely controllable flight, you're just not able to maintain altitude because you don't have enough thrust, right? But they're completely controllable flight. You can be fully in a stall and do a little turn to the left and a little turn to the right and come back out of it, and that's where, you know, I really feel like all of our skills should be as aviators, and I think that would avoid sort of like these loss of control accidents that we're still having, you know, like the Air France and all that kind of thing, right?
Oh, definitely.
We're talking with Eric Tucker, airshow pilot, corporate pilot, all-world pilot, and in just a few moments we'll be joining Theater in the Woods, but first I wanted to ask you, you've got this act where you're landing on an ambulance, and you're also doing the dead stick act. What else are you going to try to conquer? What are some other fun?
Oh man, I was just talking to Matt Yunkin. I've always wanted to fly a Beech 18 in air shows. I've always thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know, the backcountry flying. I did some flying with Austin Clements, who's in the stall competition. Me and my son are going to go watch him today, and I got to fly his Husky. It has, you know, these huge tires on it, and he actually has a reversing prop. His Husky has beta, so when he touches down, he flips a switch and then floors it, and the airplane stops crazy fast, and then he can back it up. It's hilarious. So, I mean, there's just a million. I just got my glider rating this year. I finally got my add-on. I soloed when I was 14, but I finally got my add-on. You know, so... this is just part of the, you know, aviation has so many little facets that it's, It's all part of the game. You know, I got a list of things I want to do still.
It's interesting that it took all these time to finally get that glider add-on.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I literally went and had the guy's like, oh, well, let's just go. You have all the requirements. Let's just put you through a mock check ride. And he's like, you would have passed. Just go study the bookwork. And then, like, 20 years later, so I just got it to take my kids up flying in them. You know, it was like, cool. Oh, okay, this is the perfect time.
I still haven't finished mine. I started when I was 14, and then I kind of diverged into powered because I could only do one or the other.
Yeah.
And I got back into it about 10 years ago, and it was going well until they discovered I had tailwheel time. And they're like, hey, you can fly the Pawnee. And then I was on the wrong end of the rope for the rest of the summer. You know?
Yeah, I think cross-country glider flying is probably the coolest thing you could do in aviation. I've always been local, but yeah.
Yeah, especially out where you guys are, where you got ridge soaring and all the mountain stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah,
cool
on my
stuff.
Way out here, I stopped in Moriarty, New Mexico with like Bob Carlton and the whole crew there. And man, that's exciting to me.
Yeah, that's some fun flying. Flying around Oshkosh, you know, it's like there's a lot of great flying, but flying a glider around here is not as thrilling. When I was out in Vermont, we were flying, doing the ridge soaring. I'm like, that was cool.
Ridge soaring is the coolest thing ever. Yeah. I actually, on the Cub Cross Country flight out here, in Oklahoma of all places, I found some ridge soaring in the Cub.
Really?
Yeah, Oklahoma. It was like
Eastern Oklahoma or the southern edge where it's...
It was sort of southwestern Oklahoma.
Mm, okay, yeah, we're getting kind of into the...
I had no
into
idea.
Into the Piedmont of the Rockies, at least, so maybe there's...
Yeah, there are two different little ridge lines. I'm like, son of a gun, look at that, ridge lift in Oklahoma.
Oh, also, Oklahoma spends, its you know, it's baking for, what, 8-9 months of the year anyway, holding on to all that heat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then... And then I want to put a plug in for like aviation. So like one of the gals that I was talking to about stalls, she asked me like what would be your advice for any aviator? And I told her, I was like, read Deep Survival. Have you guys ever heard of this book?
Maybe.
So Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. Every aviator should have it on the reading list. It's a bunch of short stories, and the subtext of it is who lives and who dies and why. And it's all about like the psychophysiology of your brain, how your brain is wired, and how that affects how we perform under stress. Because, you know, as aviators, typically, culturally, we look at like aviation accidents, and we think like, what was that guy thinking? Why'd he do that? And the point is that on most accidents, they weren't thinking because it's impossible for you. The circuitry of the brain cuts off your neocortex, cuts off cognitive thought to enact fight or flight responses. And the downside is that you cannot cognitively think. You can build, there's techniques to build back up to that. And then the upside of that is that the fight or flight responses are really, really resilient under stress, so you can program proper reactions. Like spin training will make it so that if you accidentally get in a spin, as soon as the spin stops or starts, you know exactly what's happening. So yeah, I mean, I've done a number of talks on that stuff, but it's that to me is what's really interesting. And the air show environment is a really interesting study of that because it's a very high stress, low margin environment.
Do you treat your air show flying kind of like a sports season? Do you focus on it for that part to stay really proficient and then go back to your other type of flying, or do you try to maintain your proficiency in all these areas, you know, constantly year-round?
Yeah, good question. So when I was flying the high-performance stuff, it was really, really important for it to be a season physiologically because the Gs are so incredible and take such a toll on the body. It's a good idea to kind of relax or recover from that. And it takes a long time to build your G tolerance up. The Cub, I'm pulling like max 2.2 Gs. So the G tolerance part of it is not as critical. But getting to where you're 100% ahead of the game, and really, really current in the airplane, I do a bunch of training for, before each air show. And I'm only doing 2, 3, maybe 4 air shows a year. It's just if I spent all my vacation time flying air shows, my wife would probably not be as thrilled.
Right. Oh, family life? What is that? I thought everybody just lived at the air show.
Right? I know. My older son, I think he just wants to live at Oshkosh. Can we just live at airplane camp? Right?
I can't say I blame him. I mean, I've been here for 40-some cool. years. So so are you going to be at the booth tomorrow? People want to come by and say hello?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to be at the Method 7 booth. I think it's from 10 to 11. But yeah, I'm going to be going to the Method 7 booth.
And that's building D, I think?
D-4042.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then Sunday you're doing the dead stick or the J3 act.
So I did the comedy act before. Tomorrow on Sunday I'm gonna do the dead stick routine, and then I'm gonna do like a 3 or 4 minutes of Cub aerobatics. Where, you know, in this airplane I can get out like loops, rolls, hammerheads, Humpty bumps. You know, some stalls and then like some half snap rolls in different geometries and split S and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Well, really excited that you took some time to come out and talk to us.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Our guest has been Eric Tucker. This has been The Traffic Jam on EAA Radio.